And good morning. It is 8:19. I'm Jonathan Reeves. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. And right now joining us on the phone lines, we're talking to U.S. Representative Rick Crawford from the 1st Congressional District. Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning to you.
First question I had for you is, of course, a lot of people have been talking about what happened in Charlottesville, and there's been a lot of discussion about those things, and also the president's response after what happened. Kind of, I want to get your thoughts on that, and then also the president's, how you think the president's been handling this.
Well, obviously, you know, I think any right-thinking person would condemn that activity that took place there, and there's no question about that. And I certainly myself, I do, and I think you've probably seen our statement to that effect. So that's not a question. The question, I guess, is how did the president handle it? And I think that there are you know, first off, my responsibility is not to, you know, try to do a post-mortem on the president's press actions and things like that, and I'm certainly not. I'm not going to try and second guess or anything like that. But I will tell you, and I've issued a statement to this effect, that had this been handled more efficiently and more forthrightly, and more in a more timely manner, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. So, yes, it could have been handled much more deftly than it was, and. But I, for my part, I think everybody knows where I stand on that action. And, you know, yeah, I wish that the president had handled it a little differently and we could move on to, you know, other issues. And unfortunately, that's just not the way it was handled.
And there's a lot of people now that are calling for removal of Confederate statues all throughout the nation. I know that the Memphis activists have been calling for removal of two Confederate statues, and there's others, and this has kind of been going on since that. What are your thoughts on that, and how do we move forward in this situation?
Well, you know, what I don't want to see happen as a nation, that we engage in revisionist history and try to erase or expunge the parts that we don't agree with or that we don't like or that make us uncomfortable. And the fact is, it's a part of our history. We learned from it. We moved on. But at what point are we going to start engaging in revisionist history on other issues that we find also challenging? And who's going to make that determination? Who's going to determine what is offensive and to what degree? And does it rise to a level of, you know, being erased and removed from the textbooks and you know, an effort made to, you know, to whitewash history. And I just think that it's not about agreeing, endorsing, condoning, or any of those things. But it is something that happened in this country. It's not, you know, to walk by and see a statue of Robert E. Lee does not imply that you celebrate, you know, the side of that he represented. But the fact remains that even folks as recently as FDR lauded Robert E. Lee for being a great general and a great leader, and you know, so why do we need to continue to create this kind of strife where it's really not necessary? And okay, so we get rid of all these statues. Do we then get rid of, you know, hey, there's some folks that might be offended by our role in World War II. Are we going to say, well, let's go ahead and any statue to a prominent World War II general, we need to get rid of that because they played a role in something that I find offensive? I mean, at what point do we draw the line and say, you know, this is our history? You know, all the scars that are associated with it, you know, black eyes and things like that, those are things we have to live with as a nation. But I think in what this does, quite frankly, it makes us stronger as a nation. You know, there's a saying that whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, I think there's something to that. We can learn from it, and not necessarily celebrating it, but denying it I don't think serves any purpose either.
So how do you think that we can, you know, kind of come together in that regard? How would you propose that we start moving forward from this? Because this is something that a lot of people have a lot of strong emotions on, and it's not going to go away.
Well, people do have strong emotions about it, and I understand that, and I recognize that. But, you know, here's the thing is that our our nation and our culture has evolved over time. And so, look, the founding fathers, many of them were slave owners, and we hold them in very high regard because of what they did to help us in our cause in the Revolutionary War and gain independence from Great Britain. And yet, many of them were slave owners. And so are we going to go in and say, you know, George Washington, sorry, you're X'd out of the history books. Thomas Jefferson, you're gone. Any number of them that were slaveholders. But the truth of the matter is, as repugnant as that is, our nation has evolved and has overcome that and has moved on. In fact, right now, we're doing everything we can to address the current issue of human trafficking, which is akin to what we were dealing with back then. So as a nation, we've evolved well beyond that, and the fact that we have these scars is a testament to that, that we've learned from it and moved on. So, you know, why keep picking at that? We're trying to reopen those wounds when, in fact, what they should be is a reminder of this is why we take the stand that we take. This is why we stand against white supremacists. This is why we do everything we can to mitigate human trafficking and end it. And so why don't we use this as tools to learn from? And it's not to brag about or to say, you know, hey, point to that as a point of pride in our history. No. But the fact is, it is a point in our history, and trying to erase it is just going to make it worse.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. One thing I did want to talk about is, let's shift focus over, because we have a few minutes, to agriculture for just one second. Governor Hutchinson had talked about along with the Arkansas Department of Economic, the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, excuse me, talking about China as a possible agriculture market, you know, really kind of shifting focus from that. It appeared like maybe he was shifting away from Cuba to China. And I know something you've been working hard on is trying to open up the Cuban market. With him shifting focus over to China, what is your thought on that? Does that mean that the tension is that maybe Cuba is a lost cause and now we're focusing in a market that maybe we can go into? What are your thoughts on the China focus?
Well, first off, I don't think that Cuba is a lost cause, and I don't think the governor believes that. And if there's a shift in focus, it's only because the reality is the opportunity does exist in China right now, and we need to do everything that we can to see that through. And when I'm going to celebrate is when I see that first shipment of rice go to China, because we've had this conversation before many times about, you know, the opportunity that the Chinese market presents. And, you know, without fail, they have moved the goalposts. And when it comes down to time to receive the shipment, you know, they'll throw up some sort of a roadblock and move the goalposts on us. So while I don't want to throw cold water on the excitement of the Chinese market, I want to be realistic about the fact that I want to see that first shipment of rice actually arrive and make its way into China and onto the table of folks in China that are anxious to consume U.S. rice. When we get to that point, then I'll celebrate. I think I'm very optimistic about this as a potential market, but the reality is, Cuba still presents a great value opportunity, even though we've got some political hurdles to clear. And I think the governor recognizes that and is not shifting focus per se, but just recognizing that this is an opportunity today that we're going to capitalize on, and we're going to continue to drive toward opening the Cuban market. And he's been very supportive of that.
By the way, just an update on the Cuban situation.
Yeah, okay, we're continuing to garner support in the House for this, and the companion piece over in the Senate, Senator Bozeman, is working on. And look, if we could get this to the floor, I believe this thing passes easily, goes to the Senate, passes easily, and the president's Cuba doctrine that he announced back in June, I believe it was in June, basically left the door open for agriculture. That's the one thing he did leave the door open for. And so I think that we have every reason to believe that he would sign this bill into law, H.R. 525. And, in fact, I have worked very closely with the legislative liaison office in the White House, and they have really given this some close scrutiny. I believe they support it. It's just a question of us getting this bill on the floor, and obviously we do have some political hurdles to clear, but we're getting very, very close to that. And we have over 40 co-sponsors now. More than well over half of the Ag Committee on the Republican side support it. Most every Democrat on the Ag Committee supports it. And we're getting very close to hitting critical mass where they'll have to allow us to mark it up and refer it to the floor.
One thing I was wanting to ask you about when we go into the House, kind of work on health care, tax reform, some of these issues under the all have been, you know, been kind of working on a little bit. By way of health care, how do, and I know this has been going on in the Senate, I asked Senator Bozeman about this, instead of going with a strict repeal and replace plan, is there talk about maybe working with Democrats on fixing what's there now, or is repeal and replace the only option for health care?
Well, I don't think it's the only option. I think what we have to realize is that, you know, look, I have voted to repeal Obamacare on numerous times. I probably all or in part somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 times. But the fact is, so people say, well, you know, you got some members of Congress and senators that are getting cold feet. Well, that may be true, but there's also a reason that they're getting cold feet, because the messages that we get from home, we're getting mixed messages. So, you know, when Obamacare was first implemented, which, by the way, for clarity, was passed without a single Republican vote, so it was a very partisan bill, and it was essentially, you know, forced upon us by an administration that had, you know, tunnel vision on this particular issue and didn't want any Republican help. And I didn't vote for it. I wasn't in Congress when it was passed. So now, that was 2009. It's now 2017, and hospitals and doctors and others have become accustomed to it. So I think what you're seeing and what we're sensing is that there is a sort of a the devil you know type scenario here, that, well, we've gotten accustomed to it, and we're afraid that if we repeal this, if you guys repeal Obamacare, that we're going to lose, because the fact is we've gotten accustomed to it, and this is something that, whether it's good or bad, it is something that we know. That's the obstacle I think that we have in front of us, is how do we demonstrate to folks that we do have their interests at heart, and that Obamacare, look, we see the evidence of it every day, that these exchanges are falling apart, that the model is unsustainable. But how do we get people to realize that and recognize that not having it and starting over is an option that may be better for them than continuing with a flawed policy that ultimately is going to crumble? So it puts all of us in office in sort of a moral quandary here, in that do we allow this train to crash, or do we continue to stand on by the tracks and wave flags and say, hey, stop, and do we try to fix it? I don't know. We're getting a fairly mixed bag from our constituents, in that, you know, depending on your perspective, hospitals have become very accustomed to it. It has helped them improve their bottom line, but it's been very expensive, and so there's folks, you know, rank and file constituents that say, well, they hate it. Then there's others that say, well, we like it. It's not that necessarily that they like it, but it's something that they've come to be accustomed to. So it's not just as easy as saying get rid of it altogether and not having any fallout. Yes, I'd like to repeal it and replace it. I'm not sure that we have that option. So then if we don't, what do we do? Which is why I go around and I talk to doctors and hospitals and providers at every level frequently, and why we have a healthcare advisory council, because we need to hear from them and get their input, so that when I'm up there trying to make a decision on behalf of my constituents, that we're doing it in a meaningful way that reflects their needs.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, run out of time, but thank you for your time. We sure appreciate you joining us this morning.